Happy Freaky Friday, everyone. Welcome into Morning Invest on this Friday morning. Hope you're doing well. We've got a busy, busy show for you on the show today. One of those days where, my God, there was just so much news to dive into, to contextualize and for us to digest this morning. So we've got a lot to get to. We're going to talk about these GDP numbers. Gross domestic product numbers, of course, came out yesterday, third quarter numbers, and they're looking pretty amazing. If you read all the mainstream media coverage of it, holy smokes, this economy is doing fantastic. We'll tell you basically why the mainstream media is lying to you and the big story that they're missing in all of this from all of the coverage. I mean, looking through CNBC and Fox News and you name it. Oh my gosh, this recovery is amazing. Really? Do you feel like it's amazing to you? We'll get into some of the latest unemployment data to show you exactly what I'm talking about, plus the housing data that is out this morning. We're also going to look at if you want to buy a home for $1,000, you can do that. We'll tell you where you could buy a home for $1,000. Get while the getting is good. We're going to look at the broader economy this morning, and we're going to talk about the amount of stimulus that would be needed to get us back into onto solid ground. Many of you have been sending in questions this morning wanting to know, or over the past few days, you know, what would it take for us to get jobs? What would it take for us to turn around this economy? Can the Federal Reserve step in? Can Jerome Powell step in and do something? So we will examine all of that and more on the show today. Grover is here somewhere, but he's not wanting to sit in his bed. So otherwise I would show him to you this morning, but unfortunately he is he's flinting around somewhere. So let's talk about these GDP numbers that came out overnight. All excitement in the mainstream media about this V-shaped recovery. Wow, these numbers are fantastic. We've got third quarter growth that is just off the charts. 30% growth, 33% growth on an annualized rate. Holy smokes. You had all of the White House staff members running out to the South Lawn of the White House to tell us how great it was. Stick with us. It's a V-shaped recovery. President Trump out on the campaign trail yesterday telling us how great the whole thing is. Stick with me. Business opportunity, growth, it's all here. And this is exactly what happened in the third quarter. Amazing GDP growth. What you're looking at to prove how large this gain was, note that the prior record-breaking GDP report was 16%. This was 33%. This is the biggest growth in any quarter in American history. Nearly 70% of GDP, of course, in the United States, is driven by consumer spending. The amount of money that's spent by you. But of course, there's a big thing that is missing in all of this, in all of this data, and why you cannot believe the mainstream media when they want to spin these numbers, is that what's missing, of course, is that the cost of goods have gone up. The cost of things have gone up. That's not factored into this. So yes, what you're spending more because you're being forced to spend more. You're buying more things that cost more. That is a big piece of this puzzle. You know, in primarily everything that's been driven here, it doesn't account for the rising cost of things. We're spending more right now because we have to. The cost of things has gone up about 3% overall. So I'm sure you've noticed this, right? Gas, milk, eggs, housing prices, by the way. Everything has gone up. But the problem is we're bringing home less money. So we can get super excited about this 33% growth, which by all accounts is fantastic. But to put this in perfect context, we are really, really nothing has changed. We're really at like a zero point. I was tweeting about this yesterday. You know, you get excited about this, but really we're kind of back to where we were. And by the way, this is the same as at the height of the Great Recession. The Great Recession numbers for us, this is exactly where we were. October of 2009. So we all want to talk about this spinning recovery, V-shaped recovery. That's what we were hearing all day yesterday from the mainstream media. Well, I guess it is a V-shaped recovery. And they were putting their graphs and charts up on the screen that show a V-shape. But of course, what that V-shape data doesn't show are all of the people that have been left out of the system, who have filed for unemployment benefits in this last week, which, by the way, has remained consistent. Over the past few months, the number of people filing for unemployment benefits or leaving the labor market is about 800,000 to 1 million people. It's consistent and not improving. These numbers don't reflect that. These numbers also don't show you how many businesses have now gone under. We've given you the Yelp data in the past few weeks as to how many businesses have now gone under. 163,000 businesses have collapsed, and more happening every day. Drive down Main Street and just see how many businesses have now put up boards on their walls or on their windows, and they're closing up shop. And now, by the way, so many businesses are putting up boards on their windows anyway because of Election Day. We covered that in the newsletter this morning. Businesses are getting ready, almost like hurricane preparedness. They are worried about having to close down because of looting and people going crazy after Election Day. So no one's going shopping. People are ordering online, but they're paying more for things. And people overall are bringing home less money, or they are working longer hours and making less money, or they're having their hours cut, but they're being asked to do more work, just like in the case of Walmart, which we brought you yesterday. So those employees who are being asked to work less at Walmart, but then also work more. So fewer hours, but having to do more unpacking, more lining the shelves, more of everything for less money, less time. Then you want to look at the housing market. So we look at the latest housing data, and it is off the charts. So we are in the middle of a housing boom. But all of this to say that this recovery right now is a wealthy person's recovery. This is a recovery for wealthy people. The top 15%. The people that can go out and buy a home right now. The housing market is booming. There's a V-shaped recovery for those people who have a job. For those big businesses like Apple and Google and Facebook, who reported earnings over the past 24 hours and saw fantastic growth. Google was almost trying to downplay this yesterday. It's kind of funny to actually listen to their earnings calls. Google was basically trying to downplay it, almost like, you know, yeah, we did well, but we don't want to really talk about it because we know a lot of people are suffering, is the way that it came off. So, yeah, we had record profits, but maybe we shouldn't really bring that up. Facebook as well. Apple's Mac sales were a record. That's because people are buying laptops like crazy because they have to. Remote schooling, they're being forced to work from home, live at home, school at home. So they're buying MacBooks and other computers. So Apple's sales still, you know, wasn't as high as expected, but still pretty darn well. And like I said, Apple sales for MacBooks hit a record. But recent data on the housing front is showing that the U.S. housing is going gangbusters. Sales of existing homes increased by 9.4% in September to 66 million units on an annual basis. It's its highest level since May 2006 right now. It's primarily driven right now by the usual suspects in any kind of market. You have supply and demand. But there's serious challenges looming for those low-income homeowners. So you're going to see a wave of foreclosures coming in 2021. Make no mistake about it. This housing boom is only benefiting the wealthy. Those people that can afford to get a mortgage. Those people that can decide, I'm going to leave the big city because, you know, pandemic here in the big city. I'm going to move out to the suburbs. That's why you're seeing bidding wars unfolding in all of these suburban areas right now. Hey, but you can buy a house for $1,000 if you want. You want to buy a house for $1,000? This just goes to show you how ridiculous things are and how out of whack things are in this economy right now. So all of these banks, all Wall Street right now is salivating over the idea of all of these foreclosures, right? These predatory banks that are just sitting there waiting for people to lose their homes. They're waiting. They're licking their lips. As soon as you're not able to pay your mortgage, and they're going to swoop in and buy them up. We've already seen Invitation Homes buying up a record number of homes, building and buying as many homes as they can get their hands on right now because we have an affordable housing crisis in this country. So we were a nation of renters to begin with. Now, more than, it's going to explode and be off the charts. But now you too can buy a house for $1,000. Take a look at this. This is in Detroit. Yeah, you can go there right now and buy a house for $1,000. We covered this in the newsletter this morning. If you're not a subscriber of our newsletter, you should be. You can subscribe and get it delivered to your inbox first thing in the morning at morninginvest.com. But here is a house in Detroit. I think this is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, if I'm not mistaken. You can buy it for $1,000. Now, I've renovated thousands of homes as a real estate investor. I can tell you that this home, just looking at it, you know, it's daunting. You might say, oh my God, I would never touch that home. For me, as a guy who is a real estate investor, I would say, oh, look at this home. There's a lot of work that needs to be doing, some masonry work here. We've got some, all right, some front steps work, not too big of a deal. Scrape that, paint that. New soffit repair, et cetera. And then inside there's water damage, you know, new drywall. It's probably roof leaking because there's water damage on the ceiling. So we got to fix the roof, update the roof. Who knows what the heating condition is, furnace, et cetera. All of that, probably all brand new stuff throughout the whole thing. So you're looking at $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 total renovation. So if you buy it for $1,000, you're still in for, you know, doing a proper renovation here, $30,000. But this is what Wall Street's waiting on, folks. This kind of stuff. Grabbing these types of properties. But I want to warn people, like, you get excited about this kind of stuff as a real estate investor. And the reason that these homes are so cheap, in fact, in many ways, they should be giving them to you. And they should, in some ways, the city should be asking, giving you like a $15,000 stipend to fix it up. Because the whole neighborhood is like this. So yeah, you fix up your one house and then you're dealing with all these burnt out hovels and empty houses all next door because the entire city of, you know, city is disgusting and collapsing. This happened before with Detroit. We remember what happened in the inner city part of Detroit. It was a city that filed for bankruptcy a number of years ago. This is the richest country in the world. And this is happening? Where you can get a house for $1,000? And make no mistake, there are 500 of these homes available for that price. Investors are going to swoop in there and these things will be gone in a heartbeat. And here's what's going to happen. It's exactly what happened in 2008. They're going to sit on these homes because they're not going to be able to find the quality contractors. This is what happened. They swooped into Tampa. They swooped into Indianapolis. They swooped into Vegas. And they bought up these homes that were decrepit, that needed work. And they thought they were, you know, and all these investors poured millions of dollars into these hedge funds to go in and buy hundreds and hundreds of homes all over the country. And then what happened was that the hedge funds were like, okay, we want to start repairing these homes, but guess what? We can't find contractors. Oh, crap. We can't find affordable contractors. And now the prices are going to be out of whack. It was price gouging. It was crazy. So they didn't repair these homes. They just sat there vacant. And then they started getting fines from the city. Hey, you, high grass, weeds, you know, graffiti, all of this stuff popping up. And then what happens is they were getting like $1,000 fine every month. And so they just let them go back to the city and tax sales, and they sold them off to other investors. So they sat there vacant for years. Because all of these Wall Street guys get excited about this type of stuff, and this is what happens. So you want to tell me about a record-breaking third quarter GDP growth? That's fantastic. Businesses going under, hundreds of thousands of people still filing for unemployment every week. No stimulus. But we've got a V-shaped recovery. My ass, we do. Let me know in the comments below if you actually believe these numbers. This is why you can't trust the mainstream media, folks. Oh, my wife just sent me some breaking news, by the way. McDonald's McRib is returning to menus across America. Hallelujah. For the first time in 8 years. The McRib is coming back. I worked at McDonald's. By the way, what the hell is the McRib? It is like a beef patty in the shape of a rib. Like it's like shaped like a rib. Like I guess when they chop up all the meat and they put it into like a little thing and it's like shaped like that. It's like eating, you know, fish shaped fish nuggets. That's what it reminds me of. I think I had a McRib one time. That is breaking news. Honey, thank you for sending me that. All important news this morning. I know many of you were waiting at the edge of your seat for that. Well, on this stimulus front, both parties have absolutely failed us. Now, I saw this morning another YouTube video out there saying, great news, stimulus is here, $1,200 checks. That literally was the title. And I was just reading through the comment thread on this guy's videos, and I was like, and they're all like, thank you for reporting this. Thank you for the updates. I was like, are you out of your mind? There is no stimulus. Stop making crap up. But now that we're getting a little bit more understanding of why there's no stimulus, it's clear as day that both parties do not want a second stimulus. Now that we've seen this back and forth unfold, and we're getting the real true story from Nancy Pelosi and Steven Mnuchin and Donald Trump, and from members of the House caucus, many of them running for re-election, we now know exactly what unfolded here. Nancy Pelosi, make no mistake, screwed the American people on the Democratic side. I'll get to the Republicans in a second. Nancy Pelosi screwed the American people by playing politics with a stimulus, dragging it out in an effort to get Joe Biden elected. Now that that's been locked up and looks like all signs are pointing to that, we'll get to the election numbers in just a moment. Now she can sort of get back on this discussion bandwagon, sending letters to Steven Mnuchin, et cetera, back and forth. But she was stonewalling. According to sources in the House, she really was stonewalling this entire process on trying to get to that number. Picking out a few key things, like the earned income tax credit. Which, okay, yeah, it's important, but like, really? That's what you were holding up the stimulus for? Really? Come on. That's absolute garbage. So these like little tiny things, it was, you know, and we didn't know exactly because she wasn't telling us. We didn't know why the stimulus was being held up. We would hear little whispers, oh, it's around the number. It's around, you know, it's around liability protections for businesses. Now we know that it was specifically around these little tiny details, the earned income tax credit for working families, but tying it up in that because she knew it was a non-starter with Republicans. That was the piece that she was holding out for. So these vulnerable Democrats in these districts who could benefit from having this held up, that's why she did it. She also did it to help Joe Biden get elected. Because if a stimulus passes, people are getting money from Donald Trump. That looks bad for Joe Biden. But even more than that, even more than Nancy Pelosi, it was the big money donors. It was the big money Wall Street people that didn't want her to pass a stimulus. All of these billionaires who funneled money into those campaigns and into Biden's, I mean, the reason he has a record number of dollars in the past few months is because of this reason, because of this institutional, this sort of deep state institutional class that wants to preserve wealth at the top. These billionaires who are funneling money to this campaign. Almost like by 5-1 compared to Donald Trump. So when big donors call you up and say, I do not want you making a deal with Republicans. I don't want you doing anything with Donald Trump right now. Do not do it. Wait till after the election. After Biden wins, then we'll talk. That's why we didn't get a stimulus before the election. That's one of the biggest reasons. Now, make no mistake about it. The other big reason that we didn't get a stimulus is because Republicans didn't want it. Mitch McConnell, also being paid for by big oil, big energy, big gas companies, didn't want them doing a deal with Nancy Pelosi. End of story. That's in the Senate. Then beyond that, President Trump, who showed a total lack of leadership on this, and by all accounts, could have twisted the arm of Mitch McConnell. Look, this party is his party at the moment. Trumpism reigns. There is no party platform. It's whatever Trump wants. There's no Republican Party platform. It's just Trumpism at this point. So if President Trump actually wanted a stimulus, he could have gotten one. He didn't. Nobody does in Washington power ranks right now. Nobody. Everyone got their $5 trillion stimulus a few months ago, happier than a pig in you know what. because there are all of these big bailouts, the big companies that got their money. Wall Street's taken care of. The banks are taken care of. And this is why we don't have a stimulus. So if you think for a second that we're going to get a stimulus after Election Day, you've got another thing coming. And again, the nightmare scenario could unfold here very shortly, and we'll show you about the election numbers coming up in a moment, which is this idea that if, you know, Biden wins, but the Senate remains Republican, good night getting anything. We got a couple of viewer questions this morning who asked us questions about whether or not we would see stimulus coming from the Federal Reserve. We'll get to some of your questions coming up in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about our show sponsor, our friends over at Webull. You can get three stocks right now valued up to $1,600 for free. You open the account, you deposit $100 into the account. You're not spending $100, you're just depositing it into activate the account. You can take that $100 back anytime you want. Then you'll get three stocks, and they're doing this until tomorrow on Halloween. So October 31st is the deadline to get three stocks. I saw one of our viewers, Barbara, said she got a gold stock from them. So a stock in gold and another stock. That's back when they were just doing two stocks. So they kind of pick them out of a hat, premium stocks that they're going to give you. And hey, it's free money, you know. And even if you never do anything else with the account, you can just sell the stocks, get your $100 back plus the stocks that you just sold. And now you've got some additional free money. It could be a couple $100 valued up to $1,600. Again, just go to morninginvest.com/Webull to get these three free stocks right now before October 31st. You have to use our link in order to get those three free stocks. All right, I want to take a question here. This is Barbara, sent us a viewer. You can leave us a voicemail, by the way, by going to morninginvest.com. And right on the side screen there, you'll see a voicemail button. So here is Barbara with her question.
Good morning, Clayton. This is Barbara Waite in Northern Michigan, and I have a political question for you. I just received my absentee ballot, and before I mark it, I would like to be able to research the incumbents listed. Can you point me in the direction of a reliable, reputable online resource where I can look up what committees they were on, what their participation was, and what bills they voted yes or no on? If you can help me out with that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara, and thank you for voting. Good on you up there in Michigan, of course, battleground Michigan. Yes, so there's one website. I would go to usa.gov is a good website to get some, you know, really good information about the election in your area. Also, for voting information and so forth, vote.org is another good website. But if you want like local races, local state races, and you want information on from the House of Representatives or Congress, obviously senate.gov, I think, or house.gov, you can go to those websites and then see exactly what committees that person has been on, their voting record, all of that stuff. You can find that's totally open by just going to the government websites for the Senate and the House of Representatives. I'm not sure exactly who you're speaking about. If they're a state senator, then you could go to the state's website. The same thing would apply there. But USA.gov, a good website for that. Here's Joseph with a question.
Hi, Clayton. This is Joseph. My question is, I currently pay 30% of my income to my rental assistance apartment. My grandmother was thinking about section-8ing her house. Do you know if I'd still pay 30% of my income to live in that house? It's been in the family for a long time. And just, is that a good thing to do considering the housing market?
Thanks, Joseph. Well, a couple of questions I would have. Why would your grandmother not just sign a lease with you without having to go through Section 8? Because then you're getting the government, the state government, involved in the Section 8 process. Like, if I think Section 8 is great. I, as a landlord myself, I have a few properties that are Section 8. You just have to file them and you have to get them verified and certified with the local municipality for that. But I would just wonder, like, why you wouldn't just work directly with your grandmother for your own lease with your grandmother, you know, to live in that house. And there might be other options too. If the house is paid for, maybe you, and you want to become a homeowner, this could be an opportunity for you to do a you know, a personal loan with your grandmother and set up a sort of a rent-to-own structure with your grandmother, so that every payment is going towards that. You could also ask her to buy the house from her. And she could be the bank. This is an opportunity for her to be a private financer of the property. So she would be the bank. Say, grandmother, I would love to buy the house from you. Can I buy it from you? And you would set up a promissory note with her and pay it back over 30 years. And it would be just like having a rental payment. Now you're building equity in a home and she's still making money. And hey, the family wins. There's many different ways to structure this, but I don't necessarily think that she should have to set up that house as Section 8 and then rent it to you. And typically Section 8, once you go through that process, they have to follow the laws, and it's sort of a lottery process. So if she does that, then you might not even be the one that gets the home to begin with. So a lot of things to consider there, but hopefully you find that helpful. You can always send us questions. We'll be answering a few more questions throughout the show today. Just go to morninginvest.com. There's a voicemail tab right on the side of the website. Just click that and try to leave your question about 30 seconds or less, financial related, politics, whatever's on your mind. We'll try to tackle it here on the show. We've got a lot more to get to this morning. Let's talk about the election this morning. And the new polls are out. These are the last national polls that we are going to see before the election. So these are the big polls. These are the CNNs. These are the Washington Post polls, the ABC News polls, etc. All of these polls are coming out. And this is the last ones we're going to get before the election. So sink your teeth into these. And where do things stand currently? So here's the NPR poll. Let's just take a closer sort of snapshot look at the NPR poll. Biden right now, 279. Those are votes that are really a lock. Trump at 125. You need 270 electoral votes to win, of course. The toss-up states, Florida, Texas, Georgia, North Carolina, Ohio, Iowa, Arizona. I mean, it's amazing right now that we're even talking about these states being toss-ups. And so, some of the sentiment, the mood right now is that Texas is likely to go Biden. Can you imagine Texas going blue? I don't know. Might be hard to believe. Here's some other polls right now. These are the other ones. Rasmussen reports. Now, Rasmussen, Scott Rasmussen, his company, he was the most accurate in the last election, 2016. He has Biden up by one right now. Look how tight it is. Just 1 point. The Hill Harris poll, Biden up by four. Just, you should look at these and notice that none of these polls have Trump up. CNBC has Biden by 11 points. CNN, Biden by 12. That's the biggest. Reuters, Ipsos poll, 10. USA Today, 8. Emerson, 5. Economist, 11. IBD poll, 4 or 5. So kind of all across the board. And then if we want to take a look at the other maps here, this is the real clear average of the country right now. The toss-up electoral votes at the top of your screen, 181 electoral votes toss-ups at the moment. 125 off to the right, 232 for Biden on the left. It's a little bit different than the NPR poll. The NPR poll here has Biden at 279. So if you believe these polls, Trump's path to victory here is narrow. Because if you look at Florida, I mean, if Trump loses Florida, he's done automatically. If Trump loses Florida, he's out. No Republican president has won the presidency without winning Florida. He's done if that happens. And that's why he's playing defense like crazy right now in Florida. He's down in Tampa yesterday, where people were passing out, by the way. They were down there in the 87 degree heat. And they were spraying water on everyone, and people were passing out like every few minutes, and the medical services had to keep showing up and picking people up in an ambulance. They were all packed together in the heat, and none of them had masks on, by the way. Florida is where President Trump in these last few days is putting a ton of attention and effort. Pennsylvania, Michigan. Where do you come down on these polls? You know, I like to think if you're that far off, if you're 12 points off, you should be out of business. Rasmussen has 1 point right now. So if someone's wrong, or someone's right. How are you 11, 12 points away from Rasmussen? CNN is that far away. So Michael Moore, the liberal from Michigan, he's a Michigander. He was the only liberal who was saying that Hillary Clinton was going to lose the last election. He was the only one saying that Donald Trump was going to win. People were furious about it. Yeah, Michael Moore doesn't believe these polls. So we have all of these new election polls out right now, and the race is incredibly tight. Should we believe these latest national polls or not? Michael Moore seems to think that we shouldn't believe these polls. By the way, he was the only one that accurately predicted the last election. Take a listen to Michael Moore.
Donna, listen, don't believe these polls, first of all. And second of all, the Trump vote is always being undercounted. Pollsters, when they actually call a real Trump voter, the Trump voter is very suspicious of the deep state calling them and asking them who they're voting for. And it's all fake news to them, remember. So it is not an accurate count. I think the safe thing to do, this is not scientific, I'm just saying from my experience of being a Michigander, whatever they're saying the Biden lead is, cut it in half right now in your head. Cut it in half, and now you're within the 4-point margin of error.
So could we be seeing this again? Could President Trump actually pull off another victory here? Let me know in the comments what you think about this. We also, so if you look at these data points here, to Michael Moore's credit, to Michael Moore's point here, let's look at this, right? So if Rasmussen has Biden at plus one, then, you know, 0.5, okay, we'll cut that in half. Biden and the Harris poll at 4, cut that down to 2. Biden at 5, cut that down to 2.5. All right. He's beating Hillary in a lot of these polls. So it could be incredibly tight, or we may all be wrong, right? I mean, we're going to see, I guess, in the next few days what's going to happen. We will know, obviously, quick enough on election night. If Florida becomes too close to call, if Florida is just too close to call, then we are going to be in for a long haul, folks. So fingers crossed that Florida goes quick. Fingers crossed that Florida happens fast, one way or the other. Otherwise, this is going to be a week. This is going to be a nightmare for this election process, and we won't know. And this is, you're going to see Wall Street taking a nosedive because they don't know who the president is and what's going to happen. It's going to be a disaster. So let's just hope that this ends peacefully next Tuesday. We've got more to get to here on the show. This story caught my attention yesterday, and I saw Glenn Greenwald, who is a great investigative reporter. It's funny because a lot of people don't know how to pin Glenn down, right? He's a leftist, by all accounts, but he is not afraid to go after the establishment. He is not afraid to go after, you know, you might say, well, how's he a leftist, but he's going after Biden, or he's going after the Biden family. He's reporting on what's going on with Hunter Biden and this shady relationship with Ukraine. Like, what's happening here? Is he really a leftist, or is he? I had someone last night tweet at me and say, how can you follow Glenn Greenwald's reporting? He's a huge Trump supporter. What? Where do you get this stuff from? See, when you're a reporter and you're covering stories and you're trying to be objective and honest and not being bought and sold by big corporations, people don't know what to do with you. You are a black sheep. Like this show. This show is not run by corporate overlords. The only person that controls this show is me and Grover. But he's off eating right now. And so no, you know, Rupert Murdoch, no Jeff Zucker, nobody tells me what to do on this show. And that's scary for some people. You know, a lot of people like the convenience of wearing a mainstream media jacket, even if they're being lied to, because it's comfortable. People like fake news because it fits their own narrative, their own family's narrative. They don't want to hear the truth because it's uncomfortable. That's why you turn on your CNN. If you're a CNN fan, you turn that on because you want to hear them bashing Trump all day. You don't want to hear them talking poorly about Joe Biden. You don't want any of that. You just want to feel comfortable, right? It's like putting on your favorite soap opera because you don't want to be uncomfortable. But the only way we actually affect change in this country is through discomfort. and growth. The only way you grow at all in life is through discomfort. You ever see those old people that like, there's two kinds of old people, right? There's old people that are just like old and decrepit and kind of lean over and they don't do anything. And all they do is watch TV and they never travel and they're not growing at all. And then they end up sort of dying slowly. It's like a slow poison. Then you see these other old people who like travel the world. I see them all the time. Travel the world and they're vibrant and they're alive and they're experiencing different things. And, you know, they've worked hard, but they're trapped. They're seeing their families. They're traveling around the world. They're thin, right? They're taking care of themselves because they want to enjoy this life. They're growing. They're seeking discomfort. They're trying to learn a new language, trying to learn how to use a computer, write code for the first time. They're challenging their brain, growing through discomfort. Most people want to be lied to by the mainstream media because it's comfortable. It's like a nice warm blanket to wrap yourself in. And so, you know, Glenn Greenwald is one of those reporters who makes you uncomfortable in a good way because he challenges our sort of blind assertions that we follow from mainstream media. He digs in where other people won't. He left The Guardian a number of years ago after threats basically that he was seeing from inside the U.S. government because of his sourcing with Edward Snowden. He left because he realized that he wasn't able to freely write about and do the types of journalism that he thought were important at the time. Going after the deep state, looking underneath those dark areas of the government that most people don't want to, or scared to, or their corporate overlords will tell them not to. They'll get a phone call. Don't cover this story. We're not covering that story. Don't do it. So Glenn Greenwald started his own internet company a few years ago called The Intercept. I thought it was a great website, great publication, doing investigative journalism, turning a critical eye back towards that deep state, looking at the mainstream media that's bought and sold by the government and billionaires on Wall Street, looking at how this two-party system is really a corrupt system. So he announced yesterday that he was resigning from The Intercept because of censorship. An article that he was writing that was critical of the Biden family, his editors basically whitewashed the article and wanted to remove key pieces of this story. And apparently this had been brewing for some time, according to Ryan Grimm, who was also there. This had been brewing for some time with his editorial staff when he signed up with The Intercept, and its premise was that there was going to be no editorial control, that they would be able to write whatever they wanted, cover the stories that were important for the American people. Well, that didn't happen, so he quit. Some people called him a baby, crying big old man, I saw on Twitter. This is a big, you know, crybaby for leaving. Or he has integrity, and he felt that he needed to be transparent, and so he left. So now he's reporting on his own Substack, so you can subscribe to his reporting there. Anyway, Tucker Carlson had him on last night, and I want you to listen to what he says about this process and how the censorship that is now getting absolutely out of hand, keeping these voices from reaching you. And we saw this week on Twitter, Facebook, Google, in front of the Senate Banking Committee, having to answer tough questions about why are you censoring these stories on the Biden family? Why? Look, I'm a progressive. These stories should be out there for the American people to make an honest assessment of a candidate they're voting for. Hiding it because it helps the deep state, it helps the federal government and Wall Street get this person elected is incredibly, this is like authoritarian regime style stuff. Listen to Glenn Greenwald last night.
To critical scrutiny. And I am so embarrassed and angered that the media outlet that I created, along with two other excellent journalists to do that, the only article it published about all of these documents that have emerged about Joe Biden, other than a column of mine where I denounced Facebook and Twitter for censoring it, was an article that made reference in passing to those documents very snidely and dismissively to say that no one should pay attention to it because it was Russian disinformation, and it cited a letter from John Brennan, James Clapper, Mike Kaden and the rest of the goons from the CIA and the intelligence community asserting it. And we're still, that letter said, we have no evidence that Russia's involved in any of this. The Intercept omitted that phrase, simply cited that letter to try and encourage people to ignore this evidence on the grounds that Russia had manufactured it and that the evidence was fabricated, even though there's never been any evidence that's been true. And everything since has disproven it, showing Russia was not involved in any of this. And nobody, certainly not even Joe Biden, disputes that these emails are, and other text messages are completely real and authentic.
So that's Glenn Greenwald. He went on to talk about the system. And you think about the CIA, the FBI, and this sort of deep state that has had it out for Donald Trump since the beginning. Now, again, I'm a progressive. But we should all care about the the intelligence apparatus in the United States government and the military having it in for one political party or another to drive this narrative. Folks, this is why Biden is going to win. When you've got friends like that, when you've got friends like the CIA and the FBI, and you've got this apparatus behind you making this happen, that's how he wins. Make no mistake about it. Here he talks about this deep state problem.
This is the real story of the last 4 years of the Trump administration, which is that for a long time on the left, there was a healthy skepticism of the CIA.
Yes, there was.
There was a lot of anti-war activism in the Bush and Cheney years. That has all disappeared. And the reason it's disappeared is because the CIA, from the very first days of the Trump administration, even before he was inaugurated, devoted themselves to sabotaging the administration because Donald Trump questioned just a few of their pieties. And that can't be done in Washington. Whoever does that must be destroyed. And so the CIA and the deep state operatives became heroes of the liberal left, the people who support the Democratic Party. They're now in a full union with the neocons, the Bush-Cheney operatives, the CIA, Silicon Valley, and Wall Street. That is the union of power, along with mainstream media outlets that are fully behind the Democratic Party, which is likely to at least take over one branch of government, if not all of them, in the coming election. And that is a very alarming proposition because they're authoritarian, they believe in censorship, and they believe in suppression of information that exposes them in any kind of a critical light.
You don't think this is true? I reported this yesterday. Think about Amazon. Has a contract with the CIA. Multi-million dollar contract with the CIA. You won't read about it. You're not going to read about it in Jeff Bezos' Washington Post very much. Should we not be concerned? The richest man in America with one of the wealthiest companies in America that pays zero taxes has a multi-million dollar contract with the CIA for their back-end web infrastructure. I mean, think about the level of censorship that we've seen in this country. And this is supposed to be the land of the free, right? Freedom of speech. And so all of these people are saying, I saw someone yesterday say to me, yeah, if you don't like Twitter censoring, then just don't use it. No, that's not what this is about. Once Twitter becomes a publisher, once they start telling you what you can read, they become a publisher. Once they start fact-checking, they become a publisher. You know, there were some things we were trying to do on Facebook for our team, and we couldn't publish it. Like, no, you're not allowed to publish that. Really? Okay, why? Well, we fact-checked that. Yeah, you fact-checked that? Turns out some of these fact checkers, they literally worked at MSNBC, CNN. They were members of the military. That's their fact checking team. Yeah, you're getting your information from Wikipedia, another billionaire run corporation. Give me a break. You want truth? It's starting to dry up, folks. Really, I'm just thinking about it. Like when that woman asked that question this morning, Barbara asked that question about finding the fact that she has to ask that question about, like, where can she get unbiased information about candidates that she wants to learn about? I mean, good luck finding that on Facebook. Good luck finding that on Twitter. Good luck finding that on MSNBC or CNN or any of the other major mainstream media networks. When you have all of this power consolidated at the top, telling you what to read, telling you what to think. So when I come on here and I tell you, you know, think critically about Biden, think critically about Trump, think critically about these two parties that are totally corrupt and in cahoots with each other, one party system. Why do you think we never have a third party candidate that's really viable? Unless they're self-funded, like, you know, like Ross Perot. Because they want to control all of it. The reason that Joe Biden's winning right now because, look, he wants to continue these foreign wars. He's fine. We're going to continue our footprint in the Middle East. We're going to build a base in Syria. Oh, that makes the military-industrial complex super happy. Folks, it all just comes down to money at the end of the day. It's all just money. The massive military-industrial complex that runs our country wants to make sure that these defense contracts are continued, billions of dollars funneling to those big companies like Boeing, etc., so that we continue these foreign wars. We can call it a war on terror, which never ends. So it's 19 years now we've had this war on terror. Continues. That's what we're up against. Money. It's all money. And, you know, they give out just a little bit of money to help the American people. Just enough. So that there's not rioting in the streets. Just enough. But as the whole thing starts to collapse, we're here. I mean, this is happening right before our eyes. So anyway, Glenn Greenwald is now publishing his own stuff over on his own Substack. We'll see where he lands next. But the fact that he was censored by the very publication that he started, because all of these New York limousine liberals wanted Biden to win, so he has to walk away from his own publication, and he is a lefty? That's how bad it's gotten. Let me know your thoughts on all of this. And thank you for supporting independent journalism. Thank you for supporting our show. I try to cover these stories that are uncomfortable. You know, I'm a progressive. I believe in public education for a public college for all Americans. I believe in Medicare for all, a healthcare system that works for people. I believe that we shouldn't have student loan debt in this country, and that it's highway robbery what these universities are doing to our children's futures. I believe we should end all of these foreign wars and reinvest that money into American people, infrastructure, and the environment. That's what I believe. But guess what? That's not terribly popular among the liberal the two-party system. But it's incredibly popular for hundreds of millions of Americans that care about these issues. But these candidates who care about those types of things get pushed out because we want to end wars. That's not popular with the military-industrial complex. President Trump is actually, he hasn't started any wars. Maybe that's why. I'm just throwing it out there. Think critically about this. He's been saber-rattling, saying that he has not been saber-rattling. He's been saying that he wants to bring everyone home. He's rubbed people the wrong way with this. Let me know your thoughts. And subscribe to the channel. If you're new here, please subscribe and give us a thumbs up. Like, hit that like button. It really helps us in the YouTube algorithm when you do that. I really appreciate that. Today is Members Only Friday, Members Only Chat Friday. Sandy Wheeler says, I'm 60 and my student loans are after me. I'm $67,000 in student loans and you're 60. Holy smokes. Jennifer Baldwin says, what are my kids being for Halloween? Oh, you missed the beginning of the show. But here are my kids this morning. My son, Miles, he's 10. He made a homemade Mandalorian costume. There's Baby Yoda in his arms. And he made it out of cardboard. My little girl, Ava, she's dressed up as Captain Marvel. My wife even did her curls just like Brie Larson in the Marvel movies. And then my tiniest, Eve, is going out as a skeleton ballerina. Because I think she just liked the tutu a lot. So So we got a few more questions here. Gary asks a question. Let's listen to Gary.
Mr. Morris, I've asked for the last several weekends and I haven't got any reply from you. I was wondering how much more has to go wrong or what needs to be done for Jerome Powell to kick in and rescue us all.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you for the question. So Jerome Powell, Federal Reserve Chair, you want him to step in and issue some sort of a FedNow digital currency to the American people or a stimulus check to the American people? Look, the Federal Reserve has almost unlimited power at this point and is sort of operating almost independently of the, well, it is, it's operating independently of the federal government. It's not elected, right? Central bank. They've done a bunch of things recently to garner even more power. And they've done things that are not constitutionally allowed, and they've gone ahead with them anyway. Buying up corporate junk bonds again, et cetera. These are things that they're not allowed to do, and they're doing them anyway to help Wall Street. So any rational person would think, well, if they can do that for Wall Street, couldn't they do it for us? Couldn't the Federal Reserve step in and issue us some sort of a digital currency, some sort of a check, some sort of a stimulus, $1,200 continuous for the rest of the year? We've heard Jerome Powell talking about that over the past couple of months, that we need continued stimulus, regular. He even used the word regular stimulus for the American people. We didn't get it. Could they step in? You have to ask yourself, what is the incentive? When I look at that, I ask the question, what's the incentive for the Federal Reserve to step in? Again, it all comes back to money. Well, for them, the incentive would be keeping Wall Street happy, keeping the banks lending, and keeping GDP high and inflation low. Okay. Given that, we just saw record GDP in the past 24 hours in the third quarter, 33%. Now, looking at that number, you can clearly think that the Federal Reserve is not going to touch a stimulus for the American people. Sadly, because those numbers are so good. But Jerome Powell has had vision, or he's seen beyond these numbers. And other members of the Federal Reserve have also seen beyond these sort of phony numbers. And they're looking at long-term unemployment, permanent job loss. I've heard Powell say it time and time again. Permanent job loss would be a permanent drag on our economy. Well, guess what? They are continuing to have job loss. 800,000 last week. Businesses closing at a record pace. So we can all be mystified by these numbers. We could all look at Google's third quarter earnings yesterday and say, wow, they did well. Facebook, record profit. That's amazing. Good for you. Amazon, way to go. And yet it's so disconnected from you and me. It's so disconnected from the normal American who's feeling and experiencing this hardship and pain right now. So to answer your question, Gary, I don't know. I don't know at what point it would become so bad. Mass unemployment, mass evictions. I mean, maybe we're going to have to wait until the evictions really start happening, until there's an absolute wave of foreclosures. In fact, that's probably when it'll happen. When we see the wave of foreclosures start to hit, perhaps then is when the Federal Reserve may have an emergency meeting with the White House. We've seen it before, and we've got to do something. You want us to step in here? Because we're going to have to. They already have the infrastructure. Make no mistake about it. The Federal Reserve already has the tokenized digital currency mechanisms now under their FedNow digital currency. It's there. They've been having meetings about it over the past 2 years. The infrastructure is there for them to take action on this, where they could issue a digital bank account to all Americans and every month put $2,000 in that account, or issue bonds that they would buy back if we reached a certain level of unemployment. They can do this. It's there already. It's just, to me, the answer is, to answer your question, Gary, is how painful does it have to be for Wall Street for this to actually happen, or the sort of deep state military industrial complex. Like, how difficult or how painful does it have to get for Boeing or Northrop Grumman or Lockheed or any of the big companies that get billions of dollars in federal defense contracts? How difficult or painful does it have to get for those guys before the Federal Reserve steps in and does something for the American people? That, I think, is the question. Because if you believe these Washington politicians and the central bank is sitting around feeling badly for you, you got another thing coming. Here's Fred. Fred has a similar question, I believe.
Clayton, my name's Fred. I would just like to know, if possible, if Jerome Powell and the feds can step in on any of this baloney that's happening to get us people some kind of stimulus before the election, or even before Biden, if Biden wins, or whatever happens November 3rd, so people can get out of the mess that they're in. Thank you.
Yeah, again, thank you. Thank you, Fred, for that question. Again, I think it at this stage, it's not going to happen. There is no appetite for it among politicians. And remember, the Federal Reserve ultimately responds to Congress. They are answerable to Congress. It's kind of funny. I mean, they're answerable to Congress, even though they have almost like pure autonomy. They're able to do whatever they want, but they have to answer to Congress. And Congress does not want a stimulus right now. They do not want any stimulus right now. They are not going to work together on any of this. And by the way, if President Trump loses, look for a very rocky road for the next few months until Joe Biden takes office. If Biden loses, but then they win the House, which there's a 93% betting odds chance right now that Democrats win the House, continue to hold the House of Representatives. There's a slimmer margin for that in the Senate. But imagine Trump wins and then they lose the Senate and the House. You think anything's going to get done? Again, greatest country in the world, doesn't act like it. Paul has a question for us this morning.
Hey, Clayton. My name is Paul Lossing from Boston, Massachusetts. I had a question. We're looking to buy a house in April, and my wife wants to buy a car. Now, would a big purchase like that hurt our chances to buy a house? Would it have an impact on the amount we can borrow or her credit score? Thanks again, Clayton, and we love your show. You have a great day.
Hey, thanks, Paul, and good luck with the house. Yes, buying a car will absolutely affect your ability to get a loan. Anytime you're trying to lock in a mortgage, do not have a big purchase before that mortgage. It will throw everything, it'll throw a wrench in the whole process. And right now, banks are tightening their belts a little bit, making lending a little bit harder to get. You do not need another pain point in your, you don't need another pinprick right now as you're trying to get a mortgage. Hold off on buying a car if you don't need to. Wait till after you've secured that mortgage and got that house. They're not going to want to see that you've taken on additional debt, other liens, and of course, other credit pull. Forget the credit pull. Who cares about them people pulling your credit? That really doesn't matter. Under new federal guidelines, that's not a big deal at all. But if you're taking on additional debt in the form of a car payment, which is a liability, you should really avoid that. And again, I would also please don't buy a new car. You know, this is one of the secrets of the wealthy. Don't buy new cars, please. Hopefully that's not what you're going to do, but you know, if you can find a good used car that's a year or two old, do that instead. But I would wait until after you get that mortgage. Another question here from Morgan. Again, you can ask a question if you'd like. Keep it to like 30 seconds or less. Just go to morninginvest.com is our website. And right there on the right-hand side page is a little voicemail button that you can click and leave us about a 30-second voicemail. Please just tell us where you're from, too. Oh, yeah, and tell us your name, too. Tell us your name, too. Name in town, name in town, name in town.
Hi, Clayton. Love your show. Thank you so much. I am a new multifamily investor, but my personal mission is to help build sustainable communities. So for me, a mobile home park that was renovated with sustainability in mind seems like it could really fit the bill. Have you heard of investors doing well with cash flow and yet keeping sustainability as a priority? Thank you.
Thank you. That was Morgan. Morgan, thank you for your question. I'm just curious why a mobile home park you think is more sustainable than you know, like a tiny house build or even just environmentally friendly houses that are being built. Obviously, we have an affordable housing crisis in this country. So I think it's a great opportunity. Look, you're seeing right now, I think the future is green energy investing and renewable energy investing, which I'm excited about. And again, on this show, I'd love to be able to talk more about those companies that are doing geothermal work in Canada and other places. I'm excited about investing in those renewables that are really recession proof, which have seen about a 500% increase over the past few years. And they are not tied to any state government, meaning that world economy has an issue or other United States has an issue. It doesn't matter because this type of clean energy, wind, solar, geothermal, fantastic, and is the future. And now that these costs have come down so significantly, that's why you're seeing BP and others moving towards solar and wind away from oil. So all good stuff. I love that you want to build a sustainable community. I have heard of plenty of investors who make that a priority, but it all comes down to what your priorities are, Morgan, because if you want, for instance, on the properties that we do at our company, we're using sustainable building materials, we're using ethically sourced materials, all of those things. But what is your goal? Is it return on investment? You're investing, so do you want a certain level of cash flow? That means might be prohibitively expensive for you to put solar panels on the roofs, right? Because then the cash flow is not going to be there, and you have to think about those things. So what are your goals? Do you want to build houses that are fully carbon neutral, that are totally sort of on their own off the grid? I love that idea. And I think that would be an ambitious project. I'd love to hear more about it. There's a lot of different companies right now doing some interesting things in this space, like the printables, 3D printing houses. Actually had a guest reach out to me as a CEO of one of these buildable 3D printable companies with actually 3D printing homes. They can get them built in like a fraction of the time, and they're using all renewable materials to do it. Really exciting stuff. So I'm excited. Plus, if you can have houses that are carbon neutral, that have very high energy ratings because they're, you know, sustainably insulated, but they're also not sucking energy, you know, off the grid, and maybe they're even contributing energy back to the grid, is powerful and exciting. So good for you, Morgan. Thank you for the question. Frank Bumstead, thank you so much for your super chat. What is your view of the panic over SAP dropping 20-something percent? Is that a sign that tech and software are not COVID safe? Of course, SAP is a German software company. Not all software, but when you think about what SAP does, it's an enterprise software in the same way that Salesforce is. So how many people need some sort of large Salesforce software that you know, the thing with Salesforce, you're paying like 15 grand a year or something for that. SAP, it's expensive to get this big sort of office software. I mean, for a lot of companies, Slack is great, which is free. People are using Microsoft Teams. Microsoft Teams has exploded. So is it, or using Discord, private Discord channels and Microsoft Teams, is it necessary to, I mean, Salesforce, for instance, is a mess. I absolutely can't stand that. I mean, I just had nightmare, you know, because Salesforce is not like one company. It's like 30 different products that kind of all operate independently of each other. And if like you get like sales cloud, then you can get like sales marketing cloud. They have like all these different things. And I'm like, well, what does that one do? And does that one even work with that one? And you find out that they don't really communicate with each other. And it's just this behemoth of a product. So I think SAP dropping 20% it's a sign of the times. I don't think we're going back to this big office infrastructure anymore. When all of these companies now are working remotely, there's less incentive to have one of these big sort of uniform software products. I mean, they lost $40 billion. $40 billion SAP lost. Thank you for the question, Frank. Yo Soy Voltron, Hi, Clayton. I've got one rental unit. My tenant has fallen behind on rent 3 months now. I'm covering both mortgages and it's tough. What would you do? Well, first of all, one of the very first things I would do is I would call 611, and that should enable you in your community to find out if you have access to any programs in that community for rental assistance. Many people do in different states. If you're California, Michigan, New York, there's other states that actually have some of these programs in place. So I would check with your state and your county if there are any rental assistance programs available or landlord assistance programs that are available. The next thing I would do is talk to your mortgage holder and let them know what's happening. Talk to them about a forbearance that you might be able to get in place, at least pushing that off a little bit longer through for 1 year or 6 months. Talk to your lender, be vocal with them and let them know what's going on. And then thirdly, I would talk to your tenant and find out where things stand and can they get caught up at all to be able to cover at least some portion of it? What's the situation there? Are they receiving unemployment benefits? So a bunch of things. I just would be very vocal and communicative if I would. That's what we've done with some of our tenants in our property, and it's been helpful. So good luck with that one, Voltron. By the way, I loved Voltron growing up. I still do. Cool. Yousef Booz says, no war. No war that Trump has started. He started a civil war. Perhaps. Good point. Yeah. So he didn't start a foreign war, but this country's ripping itself apart right now. Thank you, Yousef. Transor Z. I was a Transor Z fan. Wasn't Transor Z the one that had... Transor Z was the one where the girls had, there was like one of the girl robots would literally shoot missiles. Her breasts were missiles. Am I right about that? Am I misremembering that? Or is that a young boy coming into his own thinking that, tell me if I'm wrong about that. Amanda C says facts. I don't remember if it was one. I just remember that as a kid, as a young boy. I was like, wow. Actually, I dressed up as Voltron for Halloween 1 year. James Figueroa says, Clayton, I have a total of 3 homes, 1 in Florida, 2 in Massachusetts. I have no mortgage. Should I consider to purchase another or not? No mortgages. Well, are you living in any of them, James? So are they all rental properties? Do you live somewhere else? I mean, those are some things I would need to know to answer that question. Corey Jurgen says my ex could shoot missiles from her mouth. So James, I would say, look, if you've got these paid off, it depends on what you want. I mean, let me say this. If you go to our website at morrisinvest.com, we have a Freedom Number cheat sheet download. It's totally free. So it's my other website, morrisinvest.com, and morrisinvest.com/freedom. You can download our freedom cheat sheet. It's like 3 pages long. And first of all, it really asks you the question, number one, why? Like, why do you want to do this? What is your goal with real estate investing? Do you want to become financially free? Are you want to be able to just cover your expenses? Do you want to build massive wealth? Do you want wealth preservation? Like, what is it about investing in real estate that's interesting to you, that speaks to you, okay? Because it might not be the solution you need, you know? Like, if you want quick bucks, maybe being a day trader is better for you, you know? But anyway, think about that first. Like, why would you want to invest in real estate, number one? And then the second thing you want to consider is, you know, how much cash flow do you need to live? Like, are you comfortable right now where you don't need extra money and the cash flow from these 3 rental properties is doing fine for you? Then the question is, well, how much is too much, right? Do you want to build a nice buffer so that you, in case of some calamity, you have additional cash flow coming in, et cetera? So these are all things to consider. I know that some people I hear, like, and I'm not one of these people, but I hear them like, I want to be I want to have 1,000 properties. Like, okay, really? Is it like overkill? Like, what's the purpose? 1,000 different headaches sometimes, you know, if you're not doing it correctly. So those are some of the, I would, but if I had those paid off, I would definitely be thinking about how could I expand my portfolio into some more landlord-friendly states like Texas. And we could certainly help you with that. But those are things I would be thinking about. How can I move some of those properties? Massachusetts, very high tax state, not very landlord friendly. Maybe you could reposition some of those assets into some more landlord friendly states. So hope that helps. Thank you guys. How many new channel members do we get today? We have 12 new members today. You can support this channel by becoming a channel member just by going to morninginvest.com/join. That lets you take part in our members-only chat on Friday, in our live streams. Lisa Hill says, Clayton, can you tell us how or what companies to invest in? I'm not a financial advisor, and I don't really give recommendations on that, just like personally what companies that I believe in. First of all, I believe in investing in real estate, number one. I've mentioned a few companies that I invest in, like Apple, Sony, companies like that, that aren't going anywhere, that have a big upside. I mean, Apple's sitting on $194 billion in cash, which means they can weather anything. And during this pandemic, their profits have exploded. That's a company I study deeply. I have a lot of friends that work there, and I believe in that company. So that's a company that I invest in. But I would definitely consider some of these renewables companies that I'm excited about, some of these geothermal companies that are doing some great work, wind and solar. And so I think, you know, just spending that time researching those companies that speak to you, that aren't taking advantage of the planet, aren't hurting other people, but are actually doing great by the planet and helping people. Those are the types of businesses that I want my money in. So thank you guys so much. I don't think we missed any story. Oh, I know. I had one question. Tommy, if you're listening, Tommy sent a voicemail, but the phone call was if you're going to leave a voicemail, please don't. It's like the old radio days, you know? Hey, if you're going to leave a voicemail for us, please turn down your radio in the background. Tommy left me a voicemail, but there was a lot of noise in the background, so I couldn't play your call here on the show because it was just too loud. He was from the Bronx. So Tommy, you were asking me about fracking. You said, what is fracking? Fracking, at its simplest description, is using high-pressure water blasted into the rock bed below, deep underground, to expel natural gas. So that you get this gas that we then capture and use as fuel. That's it. A huge amount of pressure with the water blasts the underlying rock, bedrock, and expels gas that we capture and use as fuel. But the big problem, of course, is that it causes earthquakes because they're shooting this enormous amount of high pressure water down into, like, way, way down. And now earthquakes have been popping up near these fracking areas where they haven't had before, like 5.5 earthquakes on the scale. It also expels all kinds of chemicals into the groundwater. So when you're expelling just the gas, all of this other chemical abuse happens, and it's destroying people's farms. It's destroying people's drinking water. People are going to their tap and they're finding like methane, like high concentrations of gas and everything in their water, all kinds of different chemicals in it. So, yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. Thank you guys. Thank you guys for watching on this Friday. I hope you guys have a wonderful, did I miss anything, Philip, today? I'm trying to think. I had so many things. I don't know. I think we're good. Oh, I turned off your audio. That's why I can't hear you. Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. Grover says, happy Halloween. He's been sitting on my lap for a couple hours, the last 30 minutes now. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here, unless there's some big news over the weekend that we'll bring you. Have a great Halloween. Enjoy some time with the family. And it's going to be a crazy week next week, so try to get some rest. We'll see you next time, everyone.